Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Lobot Lounge. The Lobot Lounge today is deep on the subject of cryptozoology. In every corner of the world, ingrained in just about every culture, there are tales of paranormal creatures lurking on the fringes of human understanding. Stories of sightings and encounters are passed from generation to generation, and legends grow. Some of these creatures turned out to be real and are accepted into mainstream zoology. Others refuse to give up their secrets despite decades or even centuries of research. And that's what we're here today to do, folks. We're going to dive into urban legends, myths, and monsters. If Leonard Nimoy were here, we could be an episode of In Search Of, but he's not. Instead, we're doing The Gentlemen Nerds Present Urban Myths and Monsters. And here, gathered in the Lobot Lounge, is Mark Finn.
I swear it was actually a slew of yetis I saw at the base of the Himalayas.
Harumph, sir. Aaron DiOrive.
The truth is out there, folks. It's out there.
Oh, it's out. Oh, what's this? Hey, guys, I got this. Oh, it's Mickey. It's Mickey Finn. He's actually on an expedition. He's going out Sasquatch hunting.
Oh,
okay. Oh, yeah. He said, wishes you were here. He's got a good lead. Oh, he's going to try to snap a photo. And if so, we can hang it over the bar here at the Lobot Lounge. So Mickey is actually on the case, as it were, in the field, and won't, unfortunately, be joining us.
On assignment, hunting Bigfoot. That's actually very fitting, because Mickey's kind of hairy. I think he's going to be able to blend in really well.
I think so.
Won't even see him coming. My name is Joseph Botinos. I am your host and emotional touchstone. Welcome to the Gentleman Nerd. Welcome to the Lobot Lounge, the gathering place for the Gentlemen Nerds. The Gentlemen Nerds are four entertainment aficionados who know each other through various media endeavors, getting together to talk about all things nerdy, mostly in the vein of film, television, toys, and popular culture. Many topics are discussed, so please be warned, there are the potential for many spoilers. If you like what you hear, you can listen to past shows on iTunes or on our website, thegentlemennerds.com. And now, enjoy the show. Okay, guys, let's get into this. I'm a big fan of paranormal monsters and things that go, in the night.
Absolutely.
I like the idea that we don't know everything. It makes me happy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I love the fact that there's blank spots on the map. I enjoy having mysteries, like whether or not the Loch Ness Monster really exists. I love the fact that we just don't know. I'm really comfortable with that. I used to not be, but as an adult, I find more and more that's more of a comfort to me that there's a mystery than the fact that we know everything.
Yeah, one of the first books that I remember ordering in grade school. Remember when you were a kid, you know, second, third grade, they would send you those catalogs and you can order books about various topics and subjects and such. And one of my favorites was one about cryptozoology. You know, is Bigfoot real? Is the Loch Ness Monster real? That sort of thing. And I remember reading that over and over and over again. I was fascinated with stories of monsters that could exist in the real world from a very young age. So no, this subject is very near and dear to my heart. I love talking about cryptozoology creatures. So yeah,
it makes me happy too. I think that there's something about our own worded story culture as we pass down legends and stories, and I love those mockumentary kind of things where they interview people who had a Bigfoot encounter or saw the Jersey Devil or out there going, oh hell, I was out there and, you know, flew up in the sky and I saw this thing. And you know, I'm doing the voice because that's kind of what they sound like generally, but I do like, you know,
it's
there's
true.
Always that guy. Yeah, that was another.
Did you see what you said? Yeah, I did. I stand over by the tomatoes.
No, don't look, Ethel.
That's right.
It's never Neil deGrasse Tyson that sees this. It's always Otis Scuggins of Fork in the Road, Arkansas.
And you know what? God bless Otis Scuggins, because he's given me stories that I love. Thank you, Otis, wherever you are.
Y'all don't believe me, I know, but the dang old thing came out and picked me up and flew me like 40, 50 feet before it dropped me. I still got the limp.
Yep. Yep. I love me Otis Scuggins.
That's all right. You know, that's where that comes from, that salt of the earth, I guess, point of view. But let's break it down into some of our favorite urban myths and legends. And I guess the difference here is we're talking cryptozoology creatures, or cryptids for short. We're gonna focus on these things. Urban legends, I want to say, is a little different. That's a little like the hook in the back of the car and the the lick of the hand under the bed. Aren't you glad you didn't turn on the light?
Sometimes they are connected, like the Mothman. Both an urban legend and a cryptid.
So that's all exciting during October as we jump into our favorite time of year with the holidays fast approaching. Without a doubt, I think the best known and most widely documented of all the cryptids is our friend that Mickey's out looking for, Bigfoot.
Yes.
Called Sasquatch. Yeti would be the Himalayan version of this creature.
Yep.
A skunk, they call him skunk ape sometimes.
Yep.
Because apparently he has an odor that announces his presence.
Yes.
And if you believe witnesses, it seems to exist, just about everywhere. The most prevalent theory is that it's a species of undiscovered hominid, possibly even closely related to humans.
Yeah.
And we've all seen the infamous Roger Patterson Bigfoot footage from 1967 that has been debunked.
Yes.
Finally.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think on his deathbed, he admitted it he had some. I know.
And by the way, there's that new version that has Chewbacca in that film, which looks. Have you seen that? It's fantastic. It's Chewie walking across with that wide arm swing looking.
Nice.
Oh, but I remember that. In fact, I made a joke about it earlier, but In Search Of, I remember that episode where they did Bigfoot and they looked at that footage backwards and forwards and slow motion and zoomed in and zoomed out. And they said how it's certainly not human because of the way he's walking and the swaying of his arms. And that's definitely an ape-like, gait he's got. And no human could replicate this walk.
Genius. Such a smart thing. And for those of you who don't know, John Chambers was the guy that created the suit. Chambers, of course, was the man who invented the Planet of the Apes makeup and won the first Academy Award for special makeup effects. And so it's kind of cool. If you're an ape suit guy and a Gorilla Man fan like me, it's okay if this is debunked because it just makes the Gorilla Man idea cooler, right? There's literally a transference of coolness from hominid to Gorilla Man. I think that's funny.
Now the thing is, there has been or there were just a few years ago a rash of sightings, and these actually intrigue me. Whereas the Bigfoot ones now, it's like, yes, of course, no. But in China, there has been many different sightings, again, mostly by fishermen and villagers and things like that. I don't know that any scientists or anthropologists necessarily have had these encounters, but there are many areas in China that have reported something that very much matches the description of a Gigantopithecus, an actual creature, and we know of this thing, and there are skeletons and that kind of thing. But they're describing something that looks very much like what a lot of those the drawings and recreations of what the Gigantopithecus looked like. It had orange fur. It was very tall. This sort of thing. And so those things always intrigue me because. There's a small part, and again, we discussed this at the beginning of the show, the small part of my brain that always wants to believe that there is room in the world for these things that never died out, land that time forgot. Why not? The world is so big and so varied, especially once you start talking about the deep oceans, which I'm sure we'll get into, but Why not? Why couldn't there be some remote area of the vast area of China where a little tribe of Gigantopithecuses are still around, are still there?
Yeah.
You know, so why not? Why not? But those I found recently intriguing, you know, whereas I just normally now Bigfoot, oh, yeah, sure, somebody saw Bigfoot. But those interested me. I'm not saying they exist, but, you know, wow, that's fun stuff.
There's good heavens, so many so much about Bigfoot. I think obviously the legend of Boggy Creek. There was a movie that was Bigfoot like the creature. You know, pretty much that story. Yeah. So many different movies were made with Bigfoot, and I'll be honest, Bigfoot used to scare me when I was a kid in the 70s, because there was Bigfoot mania. Bigfoot was everywhere. Yeah. I mean, in my cousin's house, he had a like six trees in his backyard. Bigfoot could be back there because there's a lot of trees. You know, it was one of those things that no matter where you were. Right. And I was going to remember the legend of Boggy Creek, that scene where the guy's trying to go to the bathroom and Bigfoot attacks him through the window, and he gets up and he runs with his pants down around his ankles away from the window because Bigfoot's reaching for him. But, you know, things like that. They were model kits. They're toys. Bigfoot toys, music. They made many songs about Bigfoot. There was a one hit wonder from the 70s. I want to say, what was his name? Oh, I can't remember the guy's name. Anyway, he was a, you know, Bigfoot's coming, gonna get you. Bigfoot's coming, so you better watch out. Lock your doors and bolt your windows. Bigfoot's on the prowl. That was a Bigfoot song from the 70s.
Nice.
So I used to have that on 45.
Oh, you're kidding? He was in the $6 million Man.
Yeah, that's the apex of popular culture when you get to fight Steve Austin, you know.
Heck yeah, and get his bionic Bigfoot arm ripped off. Kenner made a bionic Bigfoot toy.
Yep.
That really huge, gigantic thing, and Steve Austin could pick him up by his chest. He had a hole in his chest where he's like a handle, and you could put Steve Austin's hand in there and do the little crank on his back, and he would lift him up off the ground, just, you know, because he could do that kind of stuff. But yeah, nice. Bigfoot, most definitely. Big, you know, the king of cryptids, I would say.
Without a doubt. Unequivocally the king of the cryptids. Yeah.
Because especially there are so many different versions, right? Like, unlike the Loch Ness Monster, who I would argue is another very, very popular one, that is restricted. Well, actually, that's not strictly true. They have other areas where they've seen creatures like that in Africa and in Canada and such. But for the most part, there is some kind of Bigfoot legend almost anywhere you go, anywhere.
Yeah.
And I find that fascinating.
There's a TV show still, I think, on the air. It's on one of those channels that maybe sci-fi, Squatch Hunters or the Sasquatch Squad or something like that.
Right.
Where they go out there and it's laughable, but I get it. I get the appeal of it. Because again, if I was, you know, 10, I'd be all about that show.
Yeah,
but you know, these guys are walking around breathing heavy with flashlights in their own faces going, I think there's a Squatch out here.
Right, yes, it's sort of the Blair Witch of...
Yeah.
And by the way, speaking of scary, nothing terrifies my daughter more than to go onto YouTube and to listen to those many YouTube videos of the strange Bigfoot roars in the night. You know, some guy out in the middle of the forest just saying, shh, shh, can you hear that? And then you suddenly hear these inhuman, almost unearthly howls. And my gosh, my daughter's just like, oh, Daddy, that's really scary. There's something really terrifying about that concept, that idea. So, no, it works. It still, you know, gives me goose pimples. I'm like, ooh.
Yeah, that's true. I'd say if Bigfoot, our hairy hominid friend, is the king of the cryptids, the queen of the cryptids would have to be Nessie.
Yes.
The Loch Ness Monster.
Unmistakably. Yeah.
Yep. Now, this is a creature that has captured our imagination, oh my gosh, for decades. I mean, this is a large, heavy-bodied creature, long neck, flippers, perhaps. So I think they had some camera footage of some blurry flipper they caught one time, which lives in Scotland's Loch Ness, a very deep, deep, deep freshwater lake.
Yeah.
Good gosh. The infamous surgeon's photo in 1933 that started whole Nessie craze.
Which, again, wasn't they also debunked on his deathbed?
That is, yes. Yeah. It proved out nothing more than a cardboard cutout and a toy submarine. Is what it was used. I know. But it's very well known and it's very famous. The other problem is that there isn't everyone always says that the Loch Ness doesn't even have that much aquatic life in it to sustain a large creature like that.
Right.
If it was a real thing, what would it eat? You know,
right.
Which, you know, and I've heard theories about how the Loch goes down so deep and somehow, you know, there's underground, deep underground passages that they lead out into maybe even the ocean or something, you know, but there's some parts are near bottomless, lad, you know, that kind right. of thing. Who knows? I mean, what's down there?
I thought some part of it did open out into the ocean. Is that mistaken?
Well, that's what I hear. I remember hearing that. But I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah. I've even heard there's a theory that somebody ventured, and I forget where I saw it, but it was basically the theory was that it was actually a giant marine slug. Hmm. Which would account for sometimes why the head has horns, why mm-hmm. sometimes it's got a ripple on its back, and right. also why no carcass has ever been found, because it would sink to the bottom
right.
rather than float when dead. And so, you know, I think that's going maybe too far in the other direction. Right. But again, you know, the possibility of dinosaurs in the modern world. Why am I not going to like that?
Yeah.
Yes.
No, absolutely. And by yes. the way, I've heard a similar theory, Mark, but having to do with eels, that they are somehow it's a large, large aquatic eel. And again, mm-hmm. that's why you get the snake-like pattern when it uh-huh. swims through the water. Sometimes when it looks like it has humps, eels are known to do that. They'll hit the surface and they'll undulate. And so little humps of the eel will show up mm-hmm. on the surface. So Got I've heard it. That as well. I've heard that it yeah. could be some very large species of eel.
Two cinematic examples and memories come to my head while we talk about Nessie. The first is from The Seven Faces of Dr. Lau, or yeah. Lo, Dr. Lo. And Lo no explains the Loch Ness Monster very quickly, because he has a little sea serpent in a jar and a little goldfish sea serpent. He goes, you know, in the water, very, very small, but when it comes out of the water, it many times bigger, and it pokes its head out and you get sea serpents, which is always very, very cute. The second one is from the parody film Amazon Women on the Moon, where sure. it said that Jack the Ripper was, in fact, the Loch Ness Monster.
Oh, really?
That Nessie, a 60-foot sea serpent from Scotland, murdered 5 streetwalkers in London before returning to Loch Ness.
Wow, I forgot that.
it really wraps up both theories rather neatly, which I like. Does, you know, there's an elegance to it. You know?
Oh my god!
And it's a beautiful little segment, because I got Henry Silva doing kind of the show's called Bullshit or Not. You be the judge. And there's Henry Silva looking very serious, and they had a bullshit reenactment, you know, where they got a London street and this streetwalker walking down the street. She looks up at this gigantic sea serpent dressed in a coat and a hat. It's like, rah, rah, rah. And she's like, oh, aren't you a big one? All right, darling, let's go.
Oh, Jesus. I got to watch that.
Yeah, you got it. It's really good.
It's hilarious. Yeah. It's hilarious. Yeah,
it's big fun. Big fun.
Rich.
Yeah. The Loch Ness Monster. But, you know, yeah. Oh, what's that police song, Synchronicity?
Where they mention,
many miles away.
Yes, yeah,
there's a shadow on the door, and something stirs from the bottom of the lock and crawls out. And,
that's right.
Yeah. Got Scooby-Doo met the Loch Ness Monster in a made-for-TV movie. But anyway, Loch Ness Monster.
There's a Sherlock Holmes movie where it ends up being like a submarine or something, right? What is the name of that movie? Sherlock Holmes... Anyway, there's some Sherlock Holmes mystery where they go and investigate, and you know, there's some base of a villain or something, and they've built a Nessie. They have built a Nessie mm-hmm. that acts like a submarine, and that's what people have been seeing. So anyway, but it is Nessie is and that's the surprising thing to me, right? Nessie, for being almost confined to Scotland. She is worldwide. I mean, people everywhere have heard of the Loch Ness Monster,
and certainly Scotland banks on that. I mean, they love the tourists that come and visit the Loch and take pictures. What's his name? The guitarist from Led Zeppelin or Black Sabbath bought a castle right there off of Aleister Crowley's old castle was right there on the Loch, and you know, they talked Jimmy about all Page. Jimmy Page, thank you. Yeah. They've talked about all the dark black magic that he was doing may have summoned something, you know, that dwells in the lock. And those are great stories. I do prefer to think of Nessie as a plesiosaur, one of my favorite aquatic dinosaurs with flippers and a long neck and a big hump. I mean, it fits. You go, oh, yeah, there she is. That's what she looks like, you know. The Loch Ness Monster. Let's get a little more modern, and by the way,
just really quick, just to point out, there is in Africa, there is a Brontosaurus equivalent.
Mokele Mbembe.
Mokele Mbembe. Mokele Mbembe. This is also a very, very well known now. I mean, cryptozoologists become very popular, but there are, and then there's another. I want to say it's an Indian myth, somewhere in Canada. And there's another sort of sea monster-esque creature that lives again in the lakes or oceans, you know, on the coast around there. It's a popular one. It's a popular one. Yeah. So anyway, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, talking about the living dinosaurs that, you know, dinosaurs went extinct 65 million years ago.
Yeah.
But the fascination with them, I love the dinosaurs. I just love them. I love the way they look. I love that mystique about them. I love the T-Rex. And we went to Disneyland recently and rode the train around the Magic Kingdom. And of course we had to ride the train over on the Magic Kingdom because you go through Disney's primeval world and there's fire and there's a T-Rex and a Triceratops and a Brontosaurus eating the music from a mysterious island is pumping through the train. It's gorgeous. It's primitive, but it's fun. And it really awakens that childlike wonder of dinosaurs, you know, what they were. But by the way, it sounds like a stretch.
There's a plesiosaur here in the United States. Joseph.
Oh, champ. Yeah.
Yes. And there's one in Georgia named Alti.
I didn't know about the Georgia one.
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah. And so, but no, I mean, come on, folks, dinosaurs still living with us. Right. That is just too cool.
Well, and this is the kind of the backup of it. And, you know, give or take whatever you want to believe. But like when researchers show like indigenous people pictures of some of these animals, or they describe the animal that they say they saw, and they're describing almost to a T a dinosaur that we know existed, you know, 65 million years ago, but they would have no way of knowing anything about these dinosaurs. They don't have books. They don't have computers. They don't have any of this. Right. And that's right. Oh yeah, it looked like that. And they go, really? It looked like that. And they go, wait a minute. You know, I mean, the climate change, an alleged event that maybe killed off the dinosaurs. It's hard to imagine how they could still be alive, but you know, deepest, darkest Africa, folks, you don't know what's out there. Africa. That's crazy. hey, let's stay aquatic for a second.
Okay.
Let's talk about one of my favorite terrors of the deep, the Megalodon shark.
Yes.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Megalodon shark.
Yes.
And these are Megalodon sharks are massive predatory sharks that dwarf even the largest great whites.
Yep.
I mean, we're talking 60 feet. They ate whales and other large marine animals, you know, mammals and things like that. And there's some people who out there believe, they swear up and down, that a megalodon still exists today.
Yep.
Yeah. They'd say they may have adapted.
I have no problem with that. For one thing, because of how efficient sharks are from a evolutionary standpoint.
Oh, yeah.
But also because I just, again, we're back to the, you know, I love the idea that that we have boundaries, and if we cross them, we will be eaten, summarily eaten. Mm-hmm. So, you know, send your little submarine down into the Mariana Trench. Go for it. Yes. What could possibly go wrong? Yeah. Oh, I know. Eaten by giant shark.
Eaten by giant shark.
I'm cool with all that, you know, or Kraken or whatever you want, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. And that's where, see, the oceans, that I was going to say, most cryptids, they're fun. But I do not for a second believe that they are real. The exception is anything that lives in the deep ocean.
Yeah.
Because there's just too much down there that we don't know. And it could be true. And that includes the megalodon. You know, it could actually exist. I mean, when you think about it, a 60 foot, I mean, some say they could grow as big as 82 feet, but a 60 foot great white is not out of the ordinary when we're talking about the deep, vast ocean.
Oh, yeah.
It could be out there. Hell yes, it could be out there.
That is the great undiscovered country. I mean, that is the last unknown, really, apart from deepest, darkest Africa, obviously. But that's like the last real unknown part of our planet. I mean, there's parts that we've never seen it. We don't know what's down there. We don't know what kind of species exists down there. Yeah. What kind of life?
And every time they manage to send a small camera down there or a new pressurized sort of gewgaw or whatchamacallit or whirligig, they always bring back pictures of these, you know, ethereal, tentacular, luminescent things with teeth and weird eyes and bioluminescent attacks. And my first thought is look, this is the early warning system. Right, those things right there should tell you, go no further.
Yeah.
What do you do? Because this is not going to get better.
Yeah, yeah. That's a nightmare. That's a nightmare, what you described.
Oh, my God.
You know, tentacles and teeth and glowing and big eyes. No, that's a nightmare. I don't want any part of that. Yes.
Yeah, we are hardwired to be terrified of things like that.
Yeah, and rightfully so.
Yes, it is in our DNA. Cthulhu is described that way for a reason.
That's right. That's right. But, you know, the existence of a megalodon, while not impossible, you know, there's been no proof of it. I want to go on record is to say that the shark in Jaws is just a giant megalodon that got lost. And, you know, it's a huge shark, and it works. I mean, that's a good monster. It's a good monster.
Certainly.
Keeps people from wandering out too far in the oceans. I mean, if they're terrified of that.
You know, that movie is supposed to finally be coming out. It's based on a novel by Steve Alton.
And, yeah.
So no, apparently they're going to make it. They're going to make. Yeah. I don't know what's going to supposed to be out in the next year or so, I think. But it's been a long time in development. They had several, you know, failed attempts to start it. And I think they finally have said, okay, you know, there's enough with Shark Week and, you know, this clear fascination that the American audience has with sharks. They finally just said, you know what? Yeah, let's do it. Let's do it. Let's go ahead and do Meg.
I mean, somebody pitched the idea of sharks in a tornado and got greenlit. So yeah, nothing.
And they're still making them.
Because the people watch them and it makes some buckets of money.
What was the one? The Sharks or Sist or something? The Shark Exorcist?
Yes.
Shark Exorcist. Oh my.
It just makes my tumors throb. It really does. Horrifying. Just the worst thing ever.
Hey, speaking of horrifying, in 1995, in Puerto Rico, farmers began to find animals dead in the field with puncture wounds in their necks and drained of all their blood. Oh, witnesses spotted a strange creature lurking about with large eyes, sharp claws and fangs, and spikes down the middle of its back. The beast terrorized Puerto Rico and then spread out to other Latin American countries. Eventually, it came to America as well, but this creature was a little different. It took the form of a strange four-legged creature, almost like a deranged dog.
Yes.
Because in 2008, police officers in Texas filmed the beast running down a dirt road. And of course, many people say that, you know, it was just a diseased coyote.
Yes.
Some people are not convinced. They're sure that what they saw was El Chupacabra.
Yes, the goat sucker.
The Chupacabra. By the way, I've seen that footage, and it does, in fact, sadly look like a poor coyote with mange. but that said, it is amazing how that particular cryptid, that urban legend, just caught on. I mean, there was Chupacabra fever, several years ago. It was on T-shirts. Chupacabra featured in several TV shows like X-Files and other things like that. No, people couldn't get enough of it.
Well, because he was a new kid on the block. Everyone was excited because they discovered something new. You know, that's fun.
And it actually brought a resurgence for looking for other possibly extinct and rare cryptids as well, which is, I think, a good thing.
Yeah.
It was basically the Chupacabra was the first cryptid of the internet age, if we're going to be real specific. The story was able to spread fast enough that it caught on.
Yeah.
Now, this is one of these, Joseph, I'm glad you've mentioned this. This is one of those instances where the cryptid species are being conflated. I think there's something to both. The very rare form of the coyote crossbreed that may or may not be hairless, with the blackened skin, is its own thing. And I don't think we can call that the chupacabra. I think that's got to be, we got to figure out another name for it, because it's not really the goat sucker. You know, there's a real clear. So I don't know what we,
it evolved into that. I think that the original description of the chupacabra was certainly much more alien, something out of like a D&D book, but later on what they think, oh, look, that's a chupacabra, was again, that hairless, mangy, coyote looking thing. But I do think it's the same creature. It's simply an evolution of. It's people saying, "Hey, I got footage of the chupacabra," and it's not. It's a mangy coyote, right? But I think that it's supposed to be, or like this is what we finally got video footage of the chupacabra, and this is what it really looks like.
Oh, I see. I gotcha. Yeah.
I think they are connected. They're absolutely connected. But by then, what the chupacabra was no longer the spikes grown out of its back, and it looks like some kind of troglodyte or something.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah.
It didn't look like that anymore. It was now just a dog.
Yeah. It's like an alien vampire, you know, like some kind of creature that was, or government experiments or something. Yeah. But here's the question, guys. I will go out there and say, sure, it probably isn't what people think it is, and the crazy alien look. But okay. What happened out there? Who's doing? If it's not real, what's been killing the livestock and leaving their flesh but taking their blood? I mean, no animal does that. You know, if an animal's going to kill an animal for food, it's going to eat the animal or carry it off or do whatever.
Now, surprisingly, you say that. Mm-hmm. And I remember reading a case. This was back when I was fascinated with the history of the Ghost in the Darkness, the mm-hmm. two lions from Saba.
Yeah.
Yes, and I read a book about the actual that case is based on, the written by the guy who was there. And one of the things that lions and other great cats do, I didn't know this, you know, they will kill something, they'll lick it until there's a bald spot, then they will clamp on and, like a baby, suck. They will just suck the blood out of whatever it is they killed, gazelle, monkey, whatever it is. And so they can, I don't know if it drains it like a vampire, right? I'm not quite like a juice box, but it does, they will suck the blood out of a living creature. And so the idea was that it could have been some cat predator, whether it was in South America, whether it was a jaguar or a jaguarundi or some other kind of cat that exhibits that sucking predatory behavior.
Mm-hmm. And I would be more inclined to think that it was something like that, because also those, you know, cats, especially the larger cats, make some of the most unearthly noises.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
You know, they don't sound like they're part of this world. Yes. And so as for the coyotes, you know, it's definitely, I think that's definitely a canine that maybe bred or interbred or, you know, whatever.
Right.
But I think you may be onto something there with the cats. It's very rare for coyotes to attack a cow.
Right.
You know, but cats.
Oh yeah.
We all know would. Cats are arrogant enough to do that. Oh, you know, they'd be like, oh, it's just a cow. Yeah. I got this.
Right.
And there's even instances of leopards killing prey much larger than them and then dragging them up a tree somehow.
Yeah.
So I absolutely believe that great cats can suck the blood out of whatever they've killed.
I would have no problem.
No, it's an interesting thought.
No, I know. There's a part of me that still wants the saucer-eyed, cockatrice-looking chupacabra. I want an explanation for that, you know, because that's just too cool. Like you said, it's a D&D monster.
It is.
And it's too cool to not, you know, have something to go on. So,
right. And by the way, that I believe very much that description came out of the Otis Scuggins or whatever. Well, what did it look like, Mr. Scuggins? Well, they had these large eyes and spikes. Yeah, that's spikes. You know what I mean? The guy was just, he was coming up with a D&D monster on the spot. And he was just describing this amazing thing. You know, it had scales, but it had fur. It's
like, okay. Wow.
Yeah. This is what happens when I roll a wandering monster.
That's the dragon. Yeah.
It's got three legs, and one of them's got a fireball on the end. I don't know how that works. It's a magic creature. Yeah, that's it. Yeah. Oh, and it eats your livestock.
And I think it may have mated with me. I'm not sure.
Yeah, Scuggins would definitely include that part.
Yeah. Penetrated me. All right. Yes. Oh my. Hey, you know what happened in 1966 in the area of Point Pleasant, West Virginia?
What happened?
Well, I will tell you. Multiple eyewitnesses reported a large humanoid creature with glowing eyes and huge wings. In one report, a pair of married couples claimed they were out for a drive at night and encountered the beast, which chased them down the road and kept pace with their car at speeds up to 100 miles an hour. Jesus. We are, of course, talking about the Mothman. The Mothman, which sightings continued all the way up until the tragic collapse of the Silver Bridge in Point Pleasant on December 15th, 1967. Ooh. Some people say they spotted the creature in the vicinity of the bridge before the disaster, leading to the speculation that the Mothman may have been an omen of some kind, trying to warn people about this bridge disaster when it was coming.
I love that.
I like that. That's a very nice twist on a cryptid, a very well-known cryptid. You know, the Mothman Prophecies, they made a movie of it. But, where he would show up.
Again, recently, haven't there been Mothman sightings, like in the last, year or so? Somebody reported, a big flying creature in somewhere in Pennsylvania or something? Anyway, but there was a big bat-like, bird-like flying creature. The people were reporting hearing the flapping of the wings and seeing the red glowing eyes, and so people were wondering if this was a return of Mothman or if this was a totally different, a new cryptid. But many, if you do a Google search on bat creature, you'll get a bunch of results for recent, and I'm talking within the last 6 months, recent sightings of this creature. So
how interesting.
Yep. And I like his persona, his look. You know, he's definitely dark and mysterious, and he's covered and he's dark, and he's got the big wings and the glowing eyes. I mean, that's not just a hairy Bigfoot wandering through the forest. That's something else. That's like a
something else.
Yeah, supernatural, otherworldly thing, and it's got wings, and it will fly and keep pace with a car. And a lot of people say it's just a large owl that people got. Maybe they were drunk or something, and Otis found this large owl and thought he saw what he saw. But many people reported seeing it. It wasn't just one or two; it was several, and it kept going up until that bridge collapse. Which leads to the speculation that it was either he caused it or he was trying to warn, and he couldn't speak our language.
Was also the Mothman. I think was one of the first of these cryptids where a lot of the speculation was that it was actually alien, that it was not of this earth. I mean, that wasn't true of Nessie. It wasn't true of Bigfoot or these other ones, Chupacabra. But Mothman, absolutely, people were saying, no, it was an alien. It was an alien that was, and again, whether it was warning people of something or was some kind of a sign of something, or it was trapped here because its ship crashed or whatever it was. I found that the being the fascinating aspect of that is, here's our first alien cryptid. That I can recall. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah. I got to tell you, I'm not a fan.
No.
A Mothman? Huh.
Well, I mean, I love the idea, but I think it's that really short duration of time. There's something about it that just feels, maybe it's because it's an alien or a time traveler or whatever the theories are, that I have more trouble swallowing that than the notion that there's an unidentified species or a hybrid species that we don't know of. And there's a part of me that plays the Scooby-Doo card. Like, this was actually some guy that set this whole thing up as a way to keep people from being on the bridge so that he could dig for his sister-in-law's cache of hidden gems or D.B. Cooper's satchel or whatever the case may be. It's just something about it that just feels manufactured. And I'm not sure why that is.
I like that. I like the idea of it being some guy dressing up in this crazy costume to do this.
Well, there were reports. The thing is, it became so popular that there actually were. I mean, I think one case that a bunch of construction workers had tied flashlights to some helium balloons
Yeah.
And had set them off, you know, and the people were like, oh, look there, you know, that. So it became something that I think people started to, hoaxes began to grow, prop up around it.
Yeah.
And I think maybe that is when, okay, first it was kind of a cool thing. Now it's like, okay, look, ooh, look, I'm the Mothman. And it's like, you know, some guy with trash bag wings or something, you know, running around in a forest. So,
like a Roger Corman film all of a sudden.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. All right, we have $12 for this costume, and I need a working Mothman in 30 minutes. What
scream,
do you got?
Scream!
Some I like it. Black plastic and some flashlights. Go. Another creature that I've always been fascinated by, and really, if I thought I could ever see this thing really, you know, in person, it would probably just freak me out and I'd drop over dead, because it's one of these things that's not supposed to be walking around. And I'm talking about the haunter of the Pine Barrens of New Jersey, the Jersey Devil.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, this is a good story, folks. This, as the legend goes, or at least one version of it, a woman who already had too many children became pregnant once again. Before the child was born, she cursed it and said the devil could have it. And on the day of its birth, she got her wish. The devil, the child, when it was born, turned out to be a horrible demon, the Jersey Devil, and it flew up the chimney and out into the forest, where it still remains to this day. Now, what does the Jersey Devil look like? Man, oh man. I just, again,
talk
as depicted
about
a in
D&D creature.
Yeah, right. Exactly. You know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
As depicted in the 1909 sightings outbreak of the Jersey Devil, it looks like somebody took a camel's head and neck, attached it to a deer's body with giant, like, hooves and claws in the front, with a spiked tail and bat wings.
Yes.
Now imagine this thing walking around. You know,
no,
holy.
It's true.
Holy moly. I mean,
but
the what?
Description,
no.
I mean, it's like, I know. It's like somebody got like a D&D player mixed up a Catoblepus and a fucking manticore. They're like, okay, it's got a big long neck like a camel and wings. It's like, no, you're mixing up two creatures, you idiot. Right. The description alone is so ludicrous. It's just such a ludicrous description where you're like, what? You know, couldn't you have made it a little more realistic? And then, of course, you forgot, Joseph, the blood-curdling scream. That's one
of
the hallmarks of this creature, is you could hear the blood-curdling scream, which to me, every great creature needs some horrific noise that it makes that you can hear in the dark, you know, while you're in the foyer camping in the middle of the night. You hear this. But yeah, so I didn't know that. I didn't know that it started out that was the origin, that a mother didn't want the child anymore and said the devil could have it.
Well, some say that Goody Bowen was actually a witch. There's more than one account of this, you know, whether this was the 13th child or the seventh child of the seventh child or
I see. Whatever. Right.
There's various different versions of it, you know. I like the, you know, the most prevalent one is the one where she says, oh, the devil can have it. I've got too many kids. But I like the idea of the witch, because that at least. The sort of thing that should not be has more credence that way. And I love the Jersey Devil. I love that. To me, that's purest folklore. That's just like the best avenues for all of this wonderful stuff. Because the Pine Barrens are, you know, a creepy, eerie place. And there's it's the kind of place where you expect people to get up to some shenanigans. So.
Right.
I
just read there. Oh, that's why it's called the Leeds Devil. Mother Leeds, the woman,
Leeds.
The mother was Deborah Leeds. So that's why it's called the Leeds Devil. That is fascinating.
Yeah, there's some neat stuff.
But no, you're right. Like there's got to be, you know, even if a monster didn't exist in the Pine Barrens, my God, people like us would make one up.
That's right.
Because you have to have a monster in the Pine Barrens. How can you not?
No doubt.
Yep.
No doubt. That's a great story, and it's a great creature. I mean, it's a weird creature. It's a crazy creature, but I like it. Do you remember? Oh, guys, I don't know if you guys ever watched American Horror Story. I think right now I'm not watching it anymore because it's ridiculous. It's so bad. But anyway, it used to be good. First two seasons really good. Third season, yes. Big disappointment.
Right.
The third season's opening was one of my favorites. It was the coven opening.
Coven.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it showed at one point. Like, you know, ceremonies out in the woods with that creepy music and these guys, people wearing long conical hoods, you know, ridiculously long conical hoods in the dark with torches and they're walking through the woods. And there was a shot in that opening that looked like the Jersey Devil or some kind of like a deer standing on two legs.
Oh, yes.
And he at one part of the opening, he turns his head to look at you. Like you shouldn't have walked up to him, or you kind of walk into the woods and you saw him and you're like, what the hell? And then suddenly he turns his head to look at you like, oh, now you've seen me and I've seen you. And it's like, oh no. You know, yeah. That's bad.
Nice.
But yes. It's the turn of his head that was like one of the best parts of that opening. And it gave me the chills every single time. Cause yeah. I thought, oh, cause he was far away. He was like in the distance.
All right.
But, yes. then he turned his head and looked at you, you know? And that's how when I think of the Jersey Devil, that's where I go.
Nice. Definitely.
Hey, let's go back into the water for another great cryptid, a classic, guys. This is a classic. This is the, oh my gosh, this is the ultimate in classic mysterious creatures. Okay. Lonely sailors at sea, long, long days and nights away from their homes and their families and their women, more importantly, report seeing and hearing the songs of sirens and, more importantly, mermaids.
Mermaids.
Yeah. Seeing women in the water. But then, no, it's a fish. No, it's a woman. What? What is this? What's going on? Mermaids.
Yeah.
I love mermaids for a number of reasons. But, you know, little half fish, half female creatures. Mermaids have a legitimate beginnings with cryptozoology. They were the first, really, of legends and people, you know, trying to find if it was true or not.
Yeah.
And I love, it's hallucinations. Absolutely. Some sailor at sea.
Without a doubt.
A manatee. Right, exactly. Yeah. It's a manatee or some other kind of fish that they're not familiar with, right. You know, and then they're like, and you're like you said, they're like, they're missing their wife, girlfriend, whatever it is. And they thought, that, you know, that porpoise looked an awful lot like my wife.
well, so, I'm not sure if it's that or if it's, I wonder if I could get down there and have relations with it. To which, yeah. At which point you go, Otis, step away from the gangplank. you know.
Yes.
Poor
Otis. Do not bother.
Back when Otis was at sea. Yes.
Exactly. Well, there's a similar Irish myth in the form of the Selkie. You know, it's interesting that they ascribe a sort of an enchanting woman in an animal or a half animal form that shows up a lot in things. And in various cultures and different guises. And I'm not real sure. I have not made a study of how that operates or what sort of question that answers or satisfies. But it is interesting to note that this goes across multiple cultures and multiple belief systems, you know. So, yeah. And again, it's such a classic that it's kind of a foregone conclusion, isn't it?
Yeah,
you know,
I mean, so many cultures have especially wherever there are any kind of an aquatic, a naval society, you know, they're going to have stories of mermaids or sirens or, you know, undines or, you know, selkies or whatever you want to call them. They are ubiquitous. They're everywhere. And so, so there's something there, right? There's something. Part of it could just be like what maybe sailors wish existed in the water. You know, that's
sure.
That has a lot to do with what these things eventually become. So what someone maybe wishes was there. This one is as classic as classic can be.
I'm glad you mentioned that, Joseph. That's a great one to sort of go out on.
Yeah, I like the mermaid, and it is a classic, and it's been realized many, many times in the film. In fact, most of the creatures that we discussed tonight have been realized, and of course, filmmakers, writers, creative folk have taken those legends and have ran with it, you know, to create their myths and their great horror stories or their chillers, you know, television, toys. They're very popular because we just don't know. I mean, we kind of know, but we don't really want to know, but we kind of know. And that's the joy of cryptozoology, though. I advise everyone to be like our friend Mickey Finn, who's probably sitting out in the woods right now with a tape recorder and a can of beer, waiting to hear the sound of a squatch.
Well, he's probably yucking it up with Otis Scoggins right now.
They could have been an Otis sponsored event. That's very true.
Well, this has been fun, and I just want to let you know, folks, the next time that you're out in the woods or you know, out by a lonely beach or a dark lake, and you hear a strange sound that you have no clue what it could be, or see a movement in the dark where there shouldn't be anybody there, just calm yourself and relax and remind yourself there are such things. The Gentleman Nerds is a Cloak and Dagger production and is written by Mark Finn, Joseph Fotinos, and Aaron DiArrive, with additional material produced by the amazing Kreshkin. Music composed and performed by the amazingly talented Ben Gibbs. And promotional material, logos, and the Gentleman Nerds mascot, the mascot with no name, it's a crypto itself, created by artistic goddess Michelle Fitzpatrick. Lobot Lounge bouncer is Maximilian, and our special guest bartender was Otis Scoggins. Hey, Otis!
Hey, Otis!
Our sound editor and accidental producer is Mickey Finn. Our executive producer and the man that we all pray never gets superpowers is Aaron DiArrive. And Mark Farnash is the man in the gorilla suit. Technical assistance provided by Blythe Christopher DiArrive and web hosting by Rustix Interactive. Ladies and gentlemen, please join us in the Lobot Lounge when next we open. And always tip your bartenders and your waitstaff. I'm Joseph Fotinos reminding you all once again that Red Skull lives.
Damn it, Siri, where am I? Damn, it's cold out here. Otis!